This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get The Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Yeah, baby. And this happened today.
On this vote, the yeas are 53, the nays are 47, and this nomination is confirmed.
Woohoo! Yeah. And then the applause went on and on and on and on and on. And then this happened.
The motion to reconsider is considered made and laid upon the table. And the president will immediately be notified of the Senate's action.
Madam President, very happily, I note the absence of a quorum.
Okay, so that happened. And the thing is, they didn't have to notify the president because apparently Ketanji Brown Jackson was watching the vote with the president at the White House in the Oval Office, I guess. And so they knew. There's a picture somewhere of them hugging. But... and it's a big but. She's not Justice Jackson yet. No, because Breyer is still there. He is going to serve out the remainder of this term, which runs through June. And so when he officially retires, then she becomes the newest Supreme Court justice. But it's all over except for the crying from Lindsey Graham and the other crybabies who, oh my God, could they be any more pathetic? Seriously. So Lindsey Graham, did you notice when they went through the roll call, he wasn't there, right? And then I thought, oh, he just wants to be like have the last vote, even though it doesn't make any difference because once they got to Elizabeth Warren and she said, aye, that was it. That put her to 51. It was done. But then they go back through again, and Lindsey Graham apparently lost his tie because he had a tie on earlier in the day when they did some press conference, but he had to do his vote from the cloakroom because he wasn't properly attired for the Senate because he didn't have a tie. Really? So he's, when they called his name the second time, he stuck his hand out and did a thumbs down. Ick. You know, you can't even shine John McCain's shoes with the thumbs down thing, idiot. Oh, okay. Well, I guess we're going to take a phone call. Hi, who's this? Hello? Hello? I'll give you one more shot. Hello? Okay, not there. So if you call the show... and yes, you're welcome to. In the first half hour, I've got the phone number up on the screen. It's 954-889-6410. You're welcome to call in, but just know, I don't have a screener. I don't have a producer doing that. So I take your calls live on the air. And when I say hello, I'm talking to you. And you need to listen through the phone because, you know, even though I don't have a 7-second delay so I can bleep out your curse words, there is a slight delay because... there is a slight delay because it's the internet. Oh, okay. So I think they're calling back again. Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
Who is this?
Lady, how's it going?
Who is this?
Huh?
Who is this?
This is Linwood, man.
Oh, hey, Linwood.
How you doing?
Okay. Hi, Linwood. I'm okay. How are you?
I'm still learning. Hey, just want to comment on this thing that's happened. You know, I'm happy that she got to the court, but once again, this sort of told every non-white person how the white supremacists or racist suspects on the Republican side really view non-white people. You're not American. You are nothing to us.
Well, and again, but clarify, because, you know, I am a white person and I hate it when people say all those white people. It's not all of us. Just so you know,
no.
Loud minority, but
that's
yes.
Why I call them racist suspects. Yep. I didn't call white liberals that.
Gotcha.
Even though I suspect that white liberals are a little bit spineless in actually calling out white people for this sort of tacky, trashy behavior in which they display. I wish, however, you would have more guts and much more fortitude to say, you know what, let's call this what this is, and let's not be ashamed by other white people to call it what it is, and say that, yes, a significant portion of white people function as white supremacists. Mm. And that's what needs to be said loud and clear.
Without a doubt.
It'd be better if it came from you because, or came from persons who function as white, because then it will tell all non-white people, okay, listen, we have a problem. And the only way we can be able to make this the United States of America and not the United States of white supremacy is to call these people for who they are. These are tacky, trashy, monstrosities people. They need to be called terrorists. I don't care, name calling or not. They need to be called what they are.
Yeah.
They are monstrous. They are monsters and monstrosities.
Without a doubt. By Linwood, did you happen to read Anita Hill's editorial in the Washington Post?
I haven't gotten a chance to read it, but some people have told me that Anita Hill was discredited and was a liar. And
what?
I'm like, no, that's not
what?
True.
What? No, hell no.
That's not true.
Hell no. In fact, today might be a good day to kind of revisit what was done to Anita Hill, because you know what? I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I had a few different ways I could go with this segment. But I think you just cemented it for me. I know what I'm going to do here. So Anita Hill, for those who don't remember, first of all, she was on this program just a few months ago because she got a great book out.
Yeah, I heard it.
I'll post a link to it along with today's show because people should hear it, because history does repeat itself. Except last time, it wasn't only, you know, it wasn't. Just the Republicans being racist assholes. It was all of them. The Democrats were equally reprehensible.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm glad you called. Thanks for the call, Linwood. It's always good to hear from you. I'm going to run because I do want to share this. So two things I'm going to do for you. I'm going to read to you what Anita Hill wrote in the Washington Post. The headline is Anita Hill, the Senate Judiciary Committee mistreated Judge Jackson? I should know. And it's in today's Washington Post. And she wrote, the shameful spectacle of the Senate Judiciary Committee during the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson makes clear the confirmation process is broken and the panel must act to restore people's faith in it. This is not simply about Jackson's reputation, which was repeatedly smeared by Republican senators peddling false narratives about her supposed coddling of child pornographers and terrorists. It's about the legacy and the future of the Supreme Court, the Senate, and the Supreme Court itself. I know something about being mistreated by the Senate Judiciary Committee. During the confirmation hearing for Justice Clarence Thomas in 1991, I was subjected to attacks on my intelligence, truthfulness, and even my sanity when I testified about my experience working for the nominee at the Education Department and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. In a spectacularly low moment, senators sought out slanderous statements from my former students. In some ways, she wrote, the committee has changed for the better since then. There are now four women on the panel and one black member. Still, when I heard predictions before the hearing that Republicans would offer little resistance to Jackson's confirmation, I knew from painful experience that assessment was overly optimistic. Even so, I was shocked by the interrogation of Jackson, a nominee with stellar credentials and more judicial experience than any of the sitting justices when they were nominated. It was obvious that no matter how composed, respectful, or brilliant her responses, her critics' only goal was to discredit her. I appeared as a witness before the committee and Jackson as the nominee, but in both situations, Republican senators demonstrated their willingness to employ racist and sexist attacks. And I gotta just jump in here a second and say she was a little too generous to the Democrats. Hold on, Clarence Thomas. I want to do Anita Hill worst questions. Okay, because I want to get this up to play for you because it's shocking. But I digress. She goes back. It shouldn't be this way, and it doesn't have to. The committee should adopt and enforce standards such as those that exist for taking testimony in federal court proceedings. Questions should be relevant and well-founded. Witness badgering should not be tolerated. Gotcha questions like how to define a woman, asked by Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn, have no place in the hearing room and fall short of what should be expected of the Senate during its exercise of its advice and consent role. The same is true of Texas Senator Ted Cruz's focus on how critical race theory is supposedly being taught in the private school on whose board Jackson sits. A confirmation hearing should be about learning how a person will judge, not how well she handles specious browbeating. Women are vulnerable to sexist campaigns aimed at undermining their intelligence and integrity. And women of color must overcome both sexism and racism that's called into play. Ignoring Jackson's credentials, her critics dismissively labeled her an affirmative action nominee, and her opinions is outside the mainstream of acceptable legal reasoning. To pack more emotional punch into their effort to disqualify Jackson, Republican senators on the committee trotted out hot-button political issues to paint her as a pawn of left-wing radicals on issues of race and crime, no matter that she was endorsed by law enforcement groups. Jackson detractors who disingenuously claim that they celebrate the arrival of the first black woman justice, just not this black woman, make a mockery of this historic state of this historic moment. Quote, I won't be supporting her, but I'll be joining others in understanding the importance of this moment. That's Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri. He said that on ABC's This Week. Well, Anita Hill writes, sorry, but you can't have it both ways. While the attacks on Jackson were notable in their intensity, they weren't without precedent. Critics of Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan were also allowed to lob racially and gender-tinged attacks during their hearings. Senator John Kyle, former senator of Arizona, slammed Sotomayor's embrace of the, quote, richness of her experiences as a Latina as evidence of her personal bias. Senator Jeff Sessions, then of Alabama, castigated Kagan for associating with, quote, well-known activist judges who have used their power to define the meaning of our Constitution, a reference to Justice Thurgood Marshall, for whom she clerked. I have no doubt that the caricaturing of all three women will continue as they become the face of what is bound to be the court's liberal minority. Confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominees give the public their one chance to see nominees before they're confirmed to lifetime positions. They should be an opportunity for senators to assess nominees' fitness, not to score political points. At their best, they should buttress citizens' confidence in the high court, not add to increasing perceptions of it as yet another political body. The Senate Judiciary Committee should take a hard look at reforming this, its proceedings, and return the confirmation process back to something that it and the country can view with pride. Now, she says, return it to something that we can view with pride. Return it? I don't recall ever being able to view this with pride. And again, the first confirmation hearings that I ever watched, and I probably didn't watch the whole thing back in 91, but it was the hearing for Clarence Thomas, and it was the disgusting treatment of Anita Hill. So Vice News put together a lovely compilation of well, what they call the most outrageous questions that senators asked her in 1991. Now, for those of you who don't remember, Anita Hill had worked for Clarence Thomas, as she alluded to in the editorial, in a few different places. And she came forward to say that he was crude and crass and sexually harassed her. Now, remember, this was 1991. What you're going to hear will shock you. And if it doesn't, it's because you're thinking in 2022 terms when everybody's a nasty asshole. right? So remember, you know, Clarence Thomas was nominated by a Republican president, and Anita Hill was a witness who was there to discredit him, to point out some real flaws in his character. Joe Biden, at the time, senator from Delaware, was also the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. So this was his playground. He chaired this hearing, and he set the tone for it. And for that, he still has never apologized to Anita Hill. All right, check out this compilation that Vice News put together.
Welcome, Professor Hill.
Thank you.
This is Biden.
Tell the committee what was the most embarrassing of all the incidences that you have alleged.
Okay, right there, I'm gonna jump in and say, what was the most embarrassing of all the things you alleged? First of all, asking a woman to talk about an embarrassing situation that she was put into by this guy is a wrong question. But hey, we're just getting started.
You testified this morning that the
this is Arlen
most
Specter,
embarrassing question,
who at the time was a Republican,
involved, this is not too bad, women's large breasts. That's a
not,
word we
it's
use
not
all
too
time.
Bad.
You
I can say in a condescending way.
An inference that Judge Thomas might want you to look at pornographic films, but you told the FBI specifically that he never asked you to watch the films. Is that correct? The fact is, flatly, he never asked you to look at pornographic movies with him.
Oh,
quote,
my God.
This is not too bad. I can read it. Thomas liked to discuss specific sex acts and frequency of sex, close quote. You said you took it to mean Judge Thomas wanted to have sex with you, but in fact, he never did ask you
oh
to have
God.
Sex.
Oh, my God. Really?
No, he did not ask me to have sex. He did continually pressure me to go out with him continually, and he would not accept my explanation as one as being valid.
So that when you said you took it to mean we ought to have sex, that was an inference,
oh my
a mere
God.
Allegation.
This
Senator,
is the definition
I would suggest
of bullying.
To you that for me, these are more than mere allegations. These are the truth to me. These comments are the truth to me.
I'm not questioning your statement when I use the word allegation. I know
right.
about.
Sure.
Sexual harassment.
Oh, do you? Yeah, because you've done it. Because you're guilty of
it. How reliable is your testimony in October of 1991 on events that occurred 8-10 years ago?
Oh, my God.
How sure can you expect this committee to be on the accuracy of your statements?
Oh, my God.
I guess one really does have to understand something about the nature of sexual harassment.
Yes.
It is very difficult for people to come forward with these things.
I've got to determine what your motivation might
this is
be.
Some other
are you a scorned
piece
woman?
Of shit? Oh, this
Do
is a Democrat,
a
by the way.
Attitude
Howell Heflin of Alabama, a Democrat.
Civil rights? Do you have a martyr complex?
Oh, my
the issue
God.
Of fantasy.
What?
Has arisen. Are you interested in writing a book?
It is appropriate.
And here's Biden
to
again.
Ask Professor Hill. Anything any member wishes to ask her.
Really? That's appropriate,
to
huh?
Plumb the depths of her credibility.
Oh, please.
You are not now drawing a conclusion that Judge Thomas sexually harassed you.
Oh,
yes,
my God.
I am drawing that conclusion. That
well,
is
then
my...
I don't understand.
Pardon me?
Obviously.
Then I don't understand.
Do you have anything to gain by coming here? Has anybody promised you anything by coming forth with this story now?
The witness did not say anything to the FBI.
Alan Simpson, another
about,
Republican.
The described size of his penis, the description
God.
Of the movie Long Dong Silver, about the pubic hair in the Coke. I did think that Senator Specter pointed out some inconsistencies. All we've heard for 103 days is about a most remarkable man, and they scoured his every shred of life, and nobody but you has come forward. If what you say this man
oh
said
God.
To you occurred, why in God's name would you ever speak to a man like that the rest of your life?
That's a very good question.
The first good question they've asked.
I'm sure that I can't not answer that to your satisfaction. That is one of the things that I have tried to do today. I have suggested that I was afraid of retaliation. I was afraid of damage to my professional life. And I believe that you have to understand that this response, and that's one of the things that I have come to understand about harassment, that this response, this kind of response, is not atypical. And I can't explain. It takes an expert in psychology to explain how that can happen. But it can happen, because it happened to me.
Hello.
Well, it just seems that so incredible to me. That is a most contradictory and puzzling thing for me.
I do not know how.
I'm sorry,
Judge
I shouldn't
Thomas
laugh.
Defends himself.
Oh my God.
I do apologize to the women of America if they got the wrong impression about how seriously I take the issue of sexual harassment. I must tell you,
I must tell
everyone else, I take sexual harassment seriously.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Wow. That, what do you even say to that? That wasn't that long ago, 1991. And yet, okay, so they're telling me they detected copyrighted audio in my video stream. Okay. Anyway, that, you know, that should not have been allowed to happen in 1991. And yet here we are in 2022, a long time later, and they did the same thing, but this time to the nominee herself. And, you know, the Democrats were so surprised that members of the U.S. Senate would treat a dignified guest in that manner. Look what they did to Anita Hill. It's just astounding. And so you watch that, and then really you should go back and listen to the interview I did with her just some months ago. Again, I'll find it. I'll post it on the blog today, along with today's show. These people know no shame. And Lindsey Graham, there's nothing honorable about him. Nothing honorable whatsoever. But, you know, it's not only the Senate, you know, they're the ones who are in the spotlight today because of this confirmation hearing. And thank God she was confirmed. And you know what? Let me also, you know, I played that long standing ovation, the clapping. Well, all the Republicans left the room. So it was all the Democratic senators left there standing and applauding, except for Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney saw his colleagues leaving and he stood there and he kept applauding once the confirmation was a done deal. I'm not a fan of Mitt Romney's, but I give him credit for that, for being a human being, you know? It's disgusting. And this is supposed to be, you know, a chamber that we look up to. They're all pieces of shit, every last one of them. And then you go to the House. So on the House today, they voted on contempt charges. Maybe it was yesterday. Was it today? Was it yesterday? The contempt hearing for Peter Navarro and Dan Scavino, two of the former guy's flunkies, who, again, refused to comply with a congressional subpoena. So Jamie Raskin is speaking, and Marjorie Q. Greene heckles him. And Jamie Raskin just shows who's boss.
But somehow the communists here in charge
communists,
have forgotten,
oh my God.
Or no, not forgotten, are purposely abusing the Constitution and what this body of Congress is supposed to do.
To equality under the law.
Jamie Raskin.
We are not communists, as the gentlelady from Georgia suggested. That's just the friends of the former president who you lionize, like mm-hmm. the dictator of North Korea, who he loves, and Vladimir Putin, who said that the greatest tragedy of the 20th century was the collapse of the Soviet Union. So those are your friends. Don't put them on our side.
And then there was this.
We were going to have a 9/11 style independent commission.
Oh,
and then you know what happened?
Let me set this up. You know, so one of their side bitched about this January 6th commission, that it's political and it's one-sided. It's all the Democrats. And Jamie Raskin, he wasn't having any of it. Okay, now we can start that clip over again.
We were going to have a 9/11 style independent commission. And then you know what happened? You know who vetoed it? The fourth branch of government, Donald Trump, who some of their members slavishly report to, like sycophants. And Donald Trump said he didn't want any investigation into the attack on this body, the Congress of the United States. He didn't want any investigation at all. And you know what the minority leader did? He walked it back. They pulled the plug on the independent commission. And that's why we ended up with the January 6th Select Committee in the House of Representatives, which the Speaker has made sure is bipartisan and has operated, in my experience, Mr. Speaker, as the most bipartisan committee I've ever been on. Why? Huh. Because we don't spend an hour at the beginning of each meeting with a bunch of empty partisan gimmicks and stunts, the kind we just saw wasting the taxpayers' money and time.
Yep. Jamie Raskin is on fire. I would love to see him step up and run for president. I really would. You know, tomorrow, Rachel Bitticoffer is going to be here. I'm going to save most of the discussion with her for when Howie gets here, because I need to introduce her to Howie Klein, and you'll hear why. So real quickly, let me tell you a couple of things that happened this afternoon since I recorded What's News, right? First of all, the UN General Assembly suspended Russia from the Human Rights Council. 93 of the member nations voted yes, 24 voted no. There were 58 abstentions, which is kind of shameful. Russia said, too bad, we don't agree with you. Although this is not the Security Council, and they have a permanent seat there, so I don't know how they could be suspended, but they should be kicked out. Then here in the Senate, before they got to the confirmation vote, the United States Senate passed two bills unanimously to suspend normal trade relations with Russia and Belarus and to codify a ban on Russian oil imports. The votes followed a deal Senate negotiators made last night. The House already passed similar bills, but these versions had to go back to the House because they were changed a little bit. And, so then the House did pass them, except there were the usual, and now I got to pull up because this thing that I'm reading does not have the roll call. And I want to see if it tells us which ones. Otherwise, I'm going to have to open. Yeah, it doesn't tell us. You know, I know it's the usual suspects. And I bet, let's see, here's the trick. House.gov will bring it up, and you click on recent votes. And here we go. Okay. So these two votes, it was 4-13-9. Okay. This first one was on, which one was this? Damn it. Well, one of them on either a suspending energy imports from Russia Act, the no votes. And it was a mix. There were two Democrats. They were Ilhan Omar and Cori Bush. The Republicans were Biggs, Bishop, Gates, Gosar, Green, Massey, and Roy. Okay. Then the next one, the other vote, was on suspending trade relations with Russia and Belarus. And this one, no Democrats voted against it, but three Republicans did. Again, Matt Gates, Marjorie Q. Green, and Massey. Just so you know, who are the patriots and who aren't? All right. Okay. Let's not wait any longer. Let's get Howie on the line. Whose turn is it today to mix up the dirty Debbies? Oh, did you hear? Debbie Wasserman Schultz has COVID, and she's not alone. Oh, well, we'll wait. Either I'll talk to Howie about it or I'll tell you tomorrow. But COVID ain't over. Ain't over. It ain't over.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chuckie's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chuckie's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTierney.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein.
Hi, Nicole.
How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. And you?
I'm doing okay. A couple of things. One is Ketanji Brown Jackson was confirmed, so she will be the next Supreme Court justice, though just not right away because we got to wait for Breyer to finish his farewell tour. This summer, right? So June, but she's in. So despite all the ugliness and the nastiness from the other side of the aisle, so that happened.
And yeah, that was good.
That was really good. And then this I got to tell you. So I just right before the show finished taping an interview that'll air here tomorrow with Rachel Bitticoffer.
Yes, I read about that on Twitter today, that you were going to be doing that with her.
So yes.
That's exciting.
And
I like her very much.
Yeah, and I want to introduce you to her because here's what she's doing. Seriously, because here's what she's doing. She said she's looking to fill her dance card. She actually is now independent. She resigned from the pack that she formed and wants to, I mean, feels compelled to work to make sure that Democrats don't lose control of either House of Congress come November. And she's got some great ideas. And she's, you know, she's looking for a few campaigns to work on. Anyway, you guys should talk. You should talk.
Yes. 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 She not too long ago, she retweeted something and said, oh, boy, anybody named Down with Tyranny, that's for me. Something like that.
Right. And I got to tell you, one thing that I loved about her, she's got a bigger potty mouth than I do. So if you think I'm quick on the F word, oh, she runs rings around me. So we had a great conversation. So it will air tomorrow. And I'm glad it's airing on a Friday because I want this to marinate out there for the weekend because she's not joking around now. We're in this is scary as it gets. Once fascism comes, there ain't no turning back. And we're pretty close already.
We are very close. And some states have gone over the line. So how are you going to introduce me to her?
You know what? I will send her an email. I brought you up. I mentioned you and the fact that you identify and help support great progressive candidates. You know, one of the things that makes me think you and she would hit it off is one of her principles is stop electing the fucking blue dogs. Stop putting these Republican light people into office thinking that you'll get, fringe voters. If they want a Republican, they're going to vote for a Republican. Stop with the damn blue dogs. So she gets
that's one of our, founding principles.
I know.
Of Blue America. So that will be good. But, it's very, very hard to find people who can agree on everything when it comes to the endorsement process. Some of my best friends and I don't agree. And I long ago learned not to get too angry when I disagree with somebody people endorse for different reasons. Like, look at you and I disagree on, for example, voting for Biden. We both have a very reasonable idea about why to in your case, why to vote for Biden. In my case, why not to vote for Biden. And I would never let something like that, interfere with a friendship.
Right.
Just recently, a lot of the members of Congress who I like most endorsed a horrible conservative Republican who's pretending to be a Democrat. He just recently relatively recently changed his party affiliation, but he's still a conservative Republican, just with a D next to his name, and they endorsed him instead of a fighting, incredible progressive, because they feel she's got a potty mouth, and they don't want her in Congress.
Really? Are these not names you can name, or can you?
I can name them.
Okay.
Both of the candidates are named Garcia.
Okay.
One of them is Christina Garcia, who's incredible. And the other one is Robert Garcia, the mayor of Long Beach, who's horrible.
Oh, wow. And so they're going for him over her.
Not only did a lot of my friends endorse him, people who I respect, admire, like very much, but the Congressional Progressive Caucus endorsed him.
Really?
And I asked some of them, like, what the hell? He's not a progressive. And, you know, basically they just didn't want her getting into Congress.
Oh, my God. Well, that, you know, yeah, see, that.
Like I wouldn't let that interfere with any friendships. That was
right.
The point I was trying to make.
Gotcha.
So in terms of Rachel, I know that there's no chance that we can agree on everything. I just hope we can agree on that we're not going to, you know, just like hate each other if we don't agree on. You know, with me, I'm not going to hate anybody who says, well, you know, this blue dog is better than a Republican. Because
they're
right. A blue dog is better than a Republican. And they can go in and endorse that blue dog if they want. I never will in a million years.
Gotcha. I hear you. Well, she seems to get it. And again, I think she's probably more conservative leaning than I am. We didn't even get into that. And her other thing is, it's not, and this goes against everything that we talk about. You know how I say when a candidate comes on with us, I'm happy to see that they put all the issues on their website, because I think only the blue dogs and the people who are ashamed of their stance don't promote where they stand on the issues.
Well, the DCCC encourages that. They don't want people to put anything controversial on their website, ever.
God.
And they tell all of the candidates that.
Oh, my God. That's just so ridiculous. But what she says is, at this point, it's not about the issues. It's not about, because most people are not like us. And by us, I'm talking you, me, the people listening, people who listen to this kind of program. Most people don't pay attention. And you need to be loud. And it's about branding and marketing. And she said, she's talking to the preaching to the choir here, that we're not doing that well.
Right. People vote on emotions much more than they vote on policies and intellectual understanding. And that's a very big problem now, because even people who vehemently disagree with the Republicans on things are switching to be Republicans now. I just read that in Pennsylvania, massive numbers of Democrats have just switched their party.
Why?
And yet they agree with the Democrats. In fact, the other day I was reading how people, like a plurality of people who got that child benefit.
Yes.
Yeah.
For the child tax credit.
Of them.
Right.
It wasn't a majority, but it was more than didn't agree. Had agreed that they were going to vote for a Republican in this cycle.
Right. And see, her point is, you got to scream from the rooftops. The Republic. You liked that $600 a month you got? Well, the Republicans are the ones who took it away from you. That instead of talking about, you know, whatever policy, it's we talk about, and not just Rick Scott's plan, but the Republicans' plan, secret plan, to kill Medicare and Social Security, to turn it into
not so secret.
Right, that's what I said. Not so secret. But we need to keep driving that home. Anyway, I think, first of all, I thought it was a great interview, and I'm still a little wired from it because we agreed on mostly everything.
She's really a brilliant woman.
She really is. And she talks like me. And she's a music fan. She's a music lover. She's like, you did music radio, and she's like, you know, now you're going to tell me you interviewed Alanis Morissette back in the 90s. I'm like, well, actually, yeah, I did. And, you know, so I sent her the interview because I did. I was an early supporter of Alanis Morissette, and they appreciated it and rewarded me with an interview like a week before she hit number one. So I sent her that. So anyway, we did hit it off. I liked her a lot. And I think she's really smart, and she's on to something here. But all I know is we need a fire lit under our side, because if the election were held today, I wouldn't want to be here tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I don't see it getting better. I see things getting worse right now.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it can't be turned around, but it has to be turned around.
Yep. Hey, so how...
Good if she has some ideas of how to do that.
Yes.
Smart lady.
Right. Okay. So I'll send you the interview we did, too, and so you can hear how she thinks anyway, if you don't know.
Well, I follow her on Twitter, and I read her stuff, so I do know a lot about how she thinks, but I do want to see that interview.
Yeah, you got it. So I'm looking at downwithtyranny.com, as I tend to do, and you do have a post up from yesterday. The Putin wing of the Republican Party is gaining strength.
I think Jonathan Chait saw that. He wrote about it today.
Really? Oh.
Well, he might not have seen it. He might have just come to the idea himself.
Right. Well, this is a thing. I mean, 63 members of the House, Republicans in the House, voted against, just basically saying, yeah, we're supportive of NATO and democracy around the world.
The democracy around the world was the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, for some of them, it's also NATO was the problem.
But democracy.
Most of them, I think that the problem was, establishing an office in Brussels in the NATO headquarters that would be there to promote democracy. And that was a direct response to the weekend election in Hungary, where Orban was reelected president. He's a fascist. And that's the problem, because I don't know if you know this or not, but CPAC is having a big fascist, they call it conservative, conclave in Budapest with Orban as the keynote speaker.
No,
and lots of Republicans have every intention of going to that. You know, they're very excited about it. Many of these 63 are the ones who are going to take part in that.
Wow. Now that's frightening.
So that's why they got up and voted against it, even though obviously the vast majority of Republicans voted with the Democrats for this thing, but 63 Republicans voted against it. Then, soon after, now 7 Republicans, although for some reason that I don't understand, Chait didn't want to include Liz Cheney, but she voted with Marjorie Taylor Greene and the rest.
Yeah,
they voted that there should not be an investigation into Russian war crimes in Ukraine. Now, what the hell is that about?
Really?
It wasn't saying, like, we will go to war with Russia. It was just saying, let's go investigate these war crimes. That was it. Let's see if there were war crimes. But, you know, to what I call the gangrene, that is a no-no. So they voted no.
Wow. Well, that's
7 of them.
That's stunning. Yeah. I mean, and if you told me 20 years ago that in 2022, the Republican Party is going to be siding with Vladimir Putin over, whatever, over anybody here. I come on, get back what kind of car was it, Back to the Future? Just go home, because nonsense. Right. And here we are. It just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. It's very, very bizarre. But the sense that it makes has to do with the direction of the Republican Party. Now, remember, he's not a communist, right? He's nothing to do with communism. He's a right winger like they are.
Mm-hmm.
He's an authoritarian like they are. I don't know if he really believes it or not, but he espouses all this Christian nationalism like they do. So they find a kindred soul there. They look in his eyes and they see his soul, and it's like theirs. Now, in a way different from the way George W. Bush saw his soul when they looked in his eyes.
Right.
When he looked in his eyes.
But did you hear Marge Traitor Green, the thing that Jamie Raskin excoriated her for, was calling them communists. What the fuck?
I have that embedded on my blog. Jamie is so brilliant.
He really is
one of the most brilliant members of Congress, and he just handled that like so well. She shut up so fast.
He's so good. You know, would he consider stepping up in 2024? Because one of the things I talked with Rachel about, we didn't get very far into it because that's not where we were going, but the Democrats can't run Joe Biden in 2024. I think he's too damaged. Unless there's some major turnaround in the next few months, I don't see how they can possibly do it. I think we need somebody.
I don't know that he's going to even want to do it.
Yeah, I don't. Well, that's the question. I don't know why anybody would want to do it.
And he's old and tired, and I have a feeling he doesn't want to do it.
Jamie Raskin is old and tired. Right.
But then we have another problem with someone who's polling even worse than him.
Kamala Harris.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know. That's why I'm talking about going outside, because she's not doing well.
Very, very, very hard for the Democratic Party to take the nomination away from a vice president.
Who wants
it. To take the nomination away from a woman.
Yep.
And to take the nomination away from an African-American, if she's African-American.
I know.
I mean, she says she is, right?
Well, she's black. I don't know that she's African-American. She's what? She's Indian. So
she's
Indian,
but she isn't really black.
But she's considered a black woman, but not an African American because she's of Indian descent. This is a conversation that I need to have with a black person, but I have with a number of black people who, number one, don't all like the term African American because it doesn't apply to all of them, and two, what do I know? I'm a white woman.
Well, she wrote about it during the election, where she said she identifies with the idea that she's a black woman and an American.
Right.
She identifies with it culturally, she claims.
Right.
Whatever. It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. That's the thing. It doesn't matter.
It'd be hard for the Democrats to take it away from a woman of color.
Yes, that is true. I mean, what she should do, what she should look at the writing on the wall, as should Joe Biden, and say, we need somebody else to run. Let's find the best possible candidate who is not only wonderful, but can actually win.
Well, I'm sure she thinks that that's a description of herself.
Yeah.
What would have been really fantastic would have been, and I think this got floated inside of the administration from what I hear, was to appoint her to the Supreme Court.
Hmm. Okay.
But they decided not to.
Oh. Well, it could still happen. Maybe Clarence Thomas will keel over.
Hey, maybe 10 of them. There aren't 10, but maybe like 4 of them will keel over. Let's hope for the best.
Well, I'd like to see Thomas go, followed by Alito. And, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and Amy Coven Barrett.
There you go. I said 4, right? You came up with 5 pretty fast.
I know. But Clarence Thomas has been there the longest, so get rid of him. And he's also, I think, I think he's the most evil, but it's hard to quantify different levels of evil. They're all fucking evil.
They're all evil. That's right.
Ay. So what do we do, Howie? I mean, you have some great candidates. That seem to be doing well. Yes.
Yes. We've already had some of our candidates win. I have every reason to believe that Greg Kassar in Austin is going to. It wasn't just a matter of winning, but it's a matter of electing someone, and he's virtually elected now. Electing someone who is going to make a difference in Congress. I mean, he is going to be. Certainly, when you say, these 3 or these 5 or these 10 are the best members, he'll be in any of those lists, I predict. So that was, that was our very, very, well, that wasn't even our first, but that was one of our people who got elected right away.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm, really happy about that. And now we have a runoff coming up because, what's her name? Jessica Cisneros.
Oh, yes. And Cuellar.
Held that Henry Cuellar to under 50%. There was a small differential between the two campaigns, and that differential was entirely in the hands of a progressive woman who was running as well. So if all those people who supported the other progressive woman then support Jessica is going to beat him in the runoff.
Right. Well, that would be awesome. We need to make more noise. and that's up really to the listeners.
You're making noise all the time, right?
I try. I do my best.
Are.
Yes.
So how do we make more noise?
Well, everybody who's listening needs to then amplify what we're saying. This is going to take a lot of effort because things are not looking good. As we said, if the election were held today, we'd be fucked and not in a good way. It would be really, really ugly. And like you said, it doesn't look like it's getting any better. And the thing is, it's because the other side wins the positioning, the branding, the marketing. We used to have really good creative people on this side. I don't know.
Smart people do this, and it doesn't work. Although, you know, I had a talk, don't ask me who, I had a talk yesterday with a member who, that's part of his job, is to work on this branding and messaging. And, you know, why isn't it working? And what it is because the tent is too big and you can't come up with anything that's going to make everybody happy. So in other words, you come up with something that sounds wonderful to me, and then you've got like this whole Blue Dog New Dem wing, and they say, no, we're not running under that.
Yep.
So that's part of what hampers the Democratic Party, a big part of what hampers the Democratic Party.
Well, it is, because you know what? On the right, all you have to do is spend a day watching, cable news or Fox, which is not news, but it's on cable. They all come on and they say the same things, and it's not a coincidence because they get their talking points every day and they read them almost verbatim. And Democrats, for the most part, don't do that. There are a handful, you know.
They try to do it, but they can't. Because, like I said, the tent is too big. Yeah. What are they going to come up with?
Right.
They're trying. It's very frustrating. They can't do it. There's always going to be a Kurt Schrader. I mean, Kurt Schrader is a Democrat. In his district, he is the top Democrat. And he agrees with the Republicans more than he agrees with the Democrats.
Right. Right. And there's Joe Manchin, and Joe Manchin is a dying breed. He's only there because he's been there forever, and people in West Virginia, for whatever reason, like him, I guess, or they just know him, so it's the devil you know. But if he were voted out,
they love him. He was the governor.
Yeah. Okay.
And then he's a senator, and he puts his thumb in the eyes of the Democrats, and they love that.
Yeah.
Even though he is preventing them from getting dental care and preventing them from getting health care and preventing them for getting a higher minimum wage.
Right.
They love him anyway because he's with them culturally, they think.
Right. And the thing is, if he is voted out, he's going to be replaced by a Republican. He's not going to be replaced by a Democrat. And I know we talked about the fact that Bernie did so well there. Well, you know, my friend Robin Kincaid is in West Virginia. She does she's lived there most of her life and knows West Virginia. She said the reason that happened is because they had an open primary, and the Trump people they instructed them to vote for Bernie, thinking that they'd have an easier time beating Bernie than Joe Biden, and that's why Bernie did so well there.
When I talk about that, I talk about 2016. Where that didn't happen. I mean, the Trump people instructed their people to vote for Trump because he was in a tough battle with Cruz and the other Republicans who were running. And you know, I mean, look, there's no question the Republicans win there. But the Bernie did so well that in quite a few counties, which then voted for Trump over Hillary, Bernie did better than Trump. So in major counties, both rural, urban, and suburban, all kinds of counties, Bernie he beat Hillary in every single county. He beat Hillary everywhere, but he beat Trump in these counties as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that wasn't because Trump was telling his supporters to vote for Bernie. He was telling his supporters to vote for him. So, I mean, I'm not saying that, if it was Bernie versus Trump, that Bernie would win. I'm not saying that because I don't think that that's the case. However, what I am saying is that a real progressive Democrat who's smart and who knows how to campaign and who's not going to try to be a Republican and is going to, not be Republican light, but is really going to go for a populist platform, that will have a chance to win there. I totally believe that. I'm not saying they're going to win,
right,
but they'll have a shot. No one in the world thought a populist Democrat can possibly compete in Missouri. And look what Lucas Krentz is doing.
Right.
I mean, it's unbelievable what this guy is doing.
Right.
He's not only is he doing that, but he's without taking corporate money or PAC money, he's raising more money than any of the Republicans.
Good. But this is what frightens me about, this is Missouri. Lucas Krentz is great. He's a great candidate. He's smart. He's been on the show. Our listeners know him and love him. He says what he means. He's perfect. But the Democratic Party is now putting up another, like, Claire McCaskill type to run against him in the primary.
Yes.
Why?
He's already beating her.
Good.
No one's taking her seriously.
Oh, good.
It's like every day a new office holder endorses him. In fact, when I say new, let's take the guy who just got elected to be mayor of Independence, Missouri, Harry Truman's old town, which is, I think it's the fifth biggest city in Missouri. The new mayor got elected on Tuesday. Today, the new mayor came out with just a gigantic, powerful endorsement of Lucas.
Oh, wow. Good. Yes. You see, and this, his campaign is one that, you know, he could win and he should win and we need him to win. So, you know, I think that might be a good thing for Rachel to, you know, I'll put you guys together somehow.
Yeah. Every Democrat who cares about keeping the Senate should get behind Lucas, and they should get behind Lucas now, because to get behind this rich woman from Anheuser-Busch.
Oh, God.
She's an heiress.
Oh, of course she is.
And you know, a conservative Democrat, kind of a Hillary kind of Democrat, but not even that good. They should... If she gets the nomination, it's all over. I mean, there's no chance in the world that she could even come close to winning.
Mm-hmm.
If Lucas, I'm not saying Lucas is going to win. I'm saying Lucas has a chance to win.
Gotcha. All right. We only got like a couple of minutes left. I'm like, Sarah Palin, really? And Santa Claus, what?
Yeah, let me tell you about Santa Claus. I've already spoken to him. I've spent at least an hour with him. The phone over several conversations already.
Really?
So Santa Claus is a real person. I didn't know this when we started the conversation, but at one time when I was just a kid, and he's just a tiny bit older than me, but I was just a kid, I was working for a congressman on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, what they used to call the Silk Stocking District, and that guy is John Lindsay. Now, he was a Republican, a liberal
Republican. He was the mayor. Mayor of New York.
He became mayor, and when he became mayor, he switched parties to become a Democrat.
Ah, okay.
He was a Republican. He was a liberal Republican. Then he became an independent, and then he became a liberal Democrat. So anyway, he appointed Santa Claus, whose name wasn't Santa Claus at the time. He appointed Santa Claus as a 23-year-old to be like an assistant commissioner of police. I don't have the exact title right, but that's in effect what it was.
Okay.
So he's been around. He's now the mayor pro tem of North Pole, which is a real town, and one of the reddest towns in all of Alaska.
So
it's not like, you know, there are a bunch of liberals there, but and he is an outspoken. Not only is he an outspoken Bernie-crat, which he is, but when people ask him what he's running on, what is his platform, he gives them Bernie's URL for his platform. That's how progressive this guy
is.
And he's quite serious. And when he says he's not accepting any money, he's not accepting any money, like no money.
Really?
He won't even take a $5 from somebody. He hasn't and won't even sign up with Act Blue so people can donate. He doesn't want donations.
Wow.
He's an amazing guy. Now, on the other hand, he already has something that's the most valuable thing you can have, which is 100% name recognition.
And
they have a ranked choice of system there.
Right.
So right now he's coming in fourth out of 51 candidates. All you need is to come in fourth because the fourth candidates then go to a runoff.
Yes.
The runoff ranked choice. everyone is going to pick him as their number two. If everyone picks him as their second choice, he's the next congressman.
Oh my God, that's classic. Now he legally changed his name to Santa Claus. I put up the picture so the people watching the video stream could see it from your Blue America endorsement graphic. He looks like Santa Claus, but now that's his name.
Yes, and when we had a discussion, because he said something just sort of musing about it, that he could go to the House wearing a Santa Claus suit.
Yeah.
And when I challenged him on that, because, I mean, like today, Lindsey Graham was not allowed on the floor because
he didn't
refused
have a tie.
To wear a tie,
right.
The Supreme Court vote. So they wouldn't let him on the floor. So he had to, you know, sit in the cloakroom and vote from the cloakroom.
Yes.
But in any case,
Lindsay's in the closet. It's so appropriate. But I'm sorry. Yes. Go ahead.
what Santa Claus said was that if he's wearing his suit, it's a suit. Santa Claus suit is a suit.
Yes, it is. All right.
And it's funny because he there was a congresswoman who he was corresponding with. He couldn't remember who it was exactly, but he thought it was Maxine Waters, and she was wearing a hat. And they didn't. The sergeant at arms said no. No head coverings are allowed in the house. You can't come in. So he told her to insist that all of the members who are wearing toupees have to take off their toupees if he had to take off her hat. The guy is hilarious. He's really funny, and he's right on every issue. He's you know, very dedicated guy. He doesn't plan to run for the full term. He's just running in the special election for the remainder of Don Young's term.
Okay. Well, it's not for very long, right?
No, it's not very long. It's a shame. And he's a really good guy. I would love to see this guy in Congress. I think it would be, you know, it would be really, really, really great.
All right. There you go. In Alaska, Santa Claus.
You can't donate to him. There's nothing anybody can do. Pray. That's it. All you can do is pray.
Talk to people in Alaska and tell them to vote for him. Because they only have one congressional district, right?
Absolutely.
I do. I know Jeannie Devon. Maybe we'll have to get her on the show. She writes, she, you know, she's a journalist. She writes The Mud Flats. That's her.
Oh, great. Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah, that's Jeannie Devon. So, and Shannon Moore, you know, they're buds.
Oh,
so,
yes, I know Shannon.
Mm-hmm. So it'd be interesting to get their take on Santa Claus. I hear he's coming to town.
He has been around. He knows everybody. He personally knew Don Young.
Well, he does, because he writes the list. He knows who's naughty and who's nice.
And he knows who's naughty and who's nice. But he's a very, very, very good guy and worth looking into.
Cool.
And, you know, it'll be interesting. Like I said, if he makes it into the final four, he'll win the seat.
Oh, that'd be great. I would love nothing more than for Santa Claus to beat Sarah Palin.
Right. Santa Claus versus Pinocchio.
There you go. Ay, ay, ay. All right, Hallie Klein. I guess we'll talk next week. Thank you as always.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you later. Bye. All right, with that, we're done. Don't forget, tomorrow, my interview with Rachel Bitticoffer. And tomorrow evening, I am filling in for Brad Friedman again on the broadcast. And, you know, in the wake of, I know we haven't really dealt with it here, but earlier this week, the IPCC, that's the UN Committee on Climate Change, issued yet another report, and this was their starkest one yet. So on Brad's show tomorrow, I'm going to speak with Eugene Linden. He is a journalist who writes on science and climate and the environment and all that. And his new book is called Fire and Flood, A People's History of Climate Change from 1979 to the Present. So we will delve into what that report says and, you know, what our chances are of this planet being inhabitable for the next generation. Yeah, you know, an upbeat show. All right. That's it. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow. I'll leave you with the news as usual. And yes, Ketanji Brown Jackson. Fucking awesome. We need to celebrate every bit of good news. And that's about as good as it gets. All right. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson is about to become the first Black woman confirmed as a Supreme Court justice. The full vote is expected early Thursday afternoon. Barring any surprises, the vote will be 53-47. That's 50 Democrats and 3 Republicans. Even more significant, though, is the fact that for the very first time in history, white men will not be the majority on the United States Supreme Court. The only downside of all this is she won't become Justice Jackson and take her place on the court until this summer, at the end of the term, after Stephen Breyer officially leaves. World leaders gathered at NATO headquarters in Brussels again on Thursday to discuss additional sanctions against Russia and ways to support Ukraine. Despite Moscow now shifting its strategy to the east, NATO's chief said the war could last years as Russia still wants, quote, the whole of Ukraine. On the ground, major fighting is underway in the east with regional military governor of the Luhansk region urging civilians to evacuate some towns. President Zelensky said that hundreds of children have been killed in Russian airstrikes since the start of the invasion. He also referenced the mass graves found in Bucha. Meanwhile, Polish President Duda said, quote, it's hard to deny that Russian forces are committing genocide in Ukraine following the images that have surfaced this week. President Biden on Wednesday condemned what he described as major war crimes by Russian forces in Ukraine, and he announced an executive order banning new investment in Russia. These latest sanctions targeted 2 of Russia's biggest banks and 2 of Putin's daughters. The European Union is reportedly considering tightening sanctions, including a ban on Russian coal imports. How about a ban on oil? Because that's what's funding this war. And the ruble, which had collapsed at the beginning of the invasion, is now back up to its value before it plummeted. What are they waiting for? The UN General Assembly is set to vote Thursday on a proposal to exclude Russia from the UN Human Rights Council, as to President Zelensky's suggestion the other day that Russia be expelled from the Security Council. Well, that doesn't seem to be happening. A new Gallup poll found that 1 in 3 people say they've been affected by some kind of extreme weather over the past couple of years, and 78% of those believe the effects of climate change are already unfolding. You think? Earlier this week, the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change warned the world must make immediate transitions away from fossil fuels and toward renewable energy, like solar and wind, to limit the impact of the climate crisis. Otherwise, we're destined for more drought and heat. The oceans will continue to batter coastal communities, and extreme weather will become even more deadly than it already is. There is some good news, though. The U.S. recently hit a major renewable energy milestone. Wind power was the second highest source of electricity for the first time since the Energy Information Administration began collecting the data. But, you know, where there's good news, there's bad. And here's the bad. The 5 radical right members of the Supreme Court reinstated a Trump-era environmental rule that makes it harder for states to block projects that could pollute rivers and streams. Chief Justice John Roberts, ostensibly a member of the 6-justice conservative majority, joined the 3 so-called liberals on the court in calling the ruling an abuse of the court's emergency powers. Justice Elena Kagan, dissenting along with Roberts, Breyer, and Sotomayor, said the majority was turning the emergency or shadow docket into just another place to rule on cases, but, quote, without full briefing and argument. So the full House on Wednesday voted to hold Peter Navarro and Dan Scavino, aides to the former guy, in contempt for defying subpoenas from the January 6th committee. Navarro claimed executive privilege shields him from testifying. It doesn't. The committee's chair, Representative Benny Thompson, said Scavino and Navarro, quote, must be held accountable for the abuse of public trust and defiance of the law. And he added, they are in contempt of Congress, which is a crime. Committee members, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, were the only Republicans to vote with all the Democrats to send the prosecution recommendation to the Justice Department. Now, as I keep telling you, you may be done with COVID, but the virus isn't done with you. Following the big gridiron dinner in D.C. last week, a slew of attendees have now tested positive. The list includes cabinet members, Attorney General Merrick Garland and Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, plus Representatives Adam Schiff and Joaquin Castro, about a half dozen journalists, and White House and National Security Council staffers. Just saying. Hey, that sweeping U.S. Postal Service reform bill that will overhaul the agency's finances and allow it to modernize its services was signed into law Wednesday by President Biden. The new law will require retired postal workers to enroll in Medicare when eligible and repeals that previous mandate that forced it to cover health care costs way up front and many, many years in advance. Those two measures alone would save the Postal Service nearly $50 billion over the next 10 years. The legislation, which received overwhelming bipartisan support, also requires the Postal Service to create an online public dashboard with local and national delivery and performance data. The changes are designed to help make the agency more financially sustainable because, unlike other government institutions, the Postal Service relies on revenue from deliveries and not taxpayer funding to support itself. Now, they just need to get rid of Louis DeJoy and fix the problem with his insisting on buying a fleet of new gas-powered vehicles instead of the electric vehicles we're supposedly transitioning to. Speaking of gas, oil executives defended themselves in a House hearing on Wednesday, saying their companies weren't responsible for the high gasoline prices. Really? So gas prices surged after Russia invaded Ukraine, and that sent crude oil prices soaring. Since then, though, crude prices have dropped by around 23%. But the price at the pump dropped just 4% from their March 11th record high. Representative Diana DeGette, who chairs the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigations, said gas prices are, quote, constraining our constituents' budgets and patience. Chevron's chief executive, Mike Wirth, said companies have little control over the market dynamics that determine fuel prices, and it takes time for competition at gas stations to bring prices down. Yeah, sure. Moving on. From the Florida Files, it's begun. Two books about transgender kids, including one from Broward resident Jazz Jennings, the book I Am Jazz, have been removed from Palm Beach County classrooms and libraries in response to that new Florida Don't Say Gay law. The book I Am Jazz tells the story of a transgender child based on the experience of Jazz Jennings. She socially transitioned in kindergarten and shares her journey through gender surgeries and societal challenges on a TV show that's now in its seventh season. Jennings is now 21 and a student at Harvard, and she said she's disappointed that her book has been targeted, saying, quote, "Schools should be encouraged to promote a diversity of views and inclusivity rather than closing students' minds at a young age. My book does that. Instead of banning it, it should be embraced." And this bears mentioning, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear vetoed a bill passed by the Republican-dominated legislature that would have banned transgender girls from participating in girls' sports. You go, Kentucky. And finally, the weekly job numbers are out, and new weekly claims for unemployment insurance fell to the lowest level since 1968. In the week ending April 2nd, the seasonally adjusted total of new claims for jobless benefits fell to 166,000. That's down 5,000 from the week before. Now, the Labor Department has released these numbers every week since January of 1967. The number of weeks with fewer new claims than last week? Just one. It was 162,000 the week of November 30th, 1968. Again, 166,000 last week. And keep in mind, the labor force is a lot bigger now than it was in 1968. So in proportional terms, the current number is even more remarkable. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com. and please click on that donate button.